The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good afternoon. We are here, Mike. Yo, the week felt so long without you, without this audience right here. You, once again, you've tuned in to Life's a Gamble, your host, Melvin Prince Jonathan. And I have a few things for you today. And those folks who call in, you really going to have to let me know if you're going to roll the dice or if you're going to pass them. So we were out in the Mount Airy section this weekend. And we approached 14 young ladies. I approached 14. My former football player approached 14. And we just asked them one question. And the question was, do you want to get married? And the age ranged from 22. I think the oldest person was 52. And so out of the 14 young ladies, I had asked, do you want to get married? I'm not talking about the ones that was married. If they wanted to get married again, I'm talking about all women who were never married. And out of my 14, only two wanted to get married. The age range from 22 to 52. Out of my 14, only two wanted to get married. All of them were African American. Only two wanted to get married. All of them had children. Only two wanted to get married. So then my partner, a friend of mine, former NFL football player, he had, from the side of the mall that he was on, he had, out of his 14, he had eight wanted to be married. So I guess they thought that they were going to marry him. But hey, you know, tall guy, six something, nice guy, in shape. You know, I guess it works for him. You know, short guy like myself, couple bucks, you know, nice car, nice place, you know. But look, I only said that because in this gamble, you have to make hard decisions, and nobody should be by themselves. Nobody. So come on, let's start the show off. I'm going to throw some names out there today, and you guys are going to call in and let me know who these people are and the relationships they have. So I want to know if you actually know what it is that you're talking about. I want to know if you know your politicians, and I want to know if you know your conversation. Because what I've found is that a lot of people talk to hear themselves talk. And somehow we're going to have to put an end to that. If you know, then speak. If you don't know, then listen. Let me say that again. If you know, then speak. Because I believe in the confidence that you'll speak with if you know. But if you don't know, don't say anything at all. Because then we see how smart you are or how stupid you are as soon as you open your mouth. So we're not playing anymore in Philadelphia, nice politics, where everybody look you in your face, smile in your face, and then they lie to you. You get no services. Nothing but big construction in your neighborhood. No services. So look, we're going to go to the phones in just 2 minutes because I want to ask some questions. Number one, Chris Wood, the person who was the president of 1199C. You got the call up here, and you can tell me about who he is. I've never met him before. I know a whole lot about him, but I've never met him. So let's be clear how information flows. Somebody can know your whole legacy, your whole lineage, your whole pedigree, and you could have never met them before, but they know you before you enter the room. Dan, I want to know who Chris Wood is, although he was former president of 1199C, and I also want to know his relationship with Isaiah, Councilman Isaiah. So I'm asking these questions because for those people who didn't read the article in the paper, I want to know what you know, because I can only tell you what I know, and I know some things. Okay? Another thing that I like for you to help me on, Cindy Bass. I know Cindy Bass. Knew her before she became Councilwoman Cindy Bass. But I need to know if the listening audience know these people. See, sometimes you're validated by people who know you and your family. And if your family, who you live with, say that you ain't, then guess what? I'm more inclined to believe your family. And if your family say, you know what? He's a caretaker. You know what? He's giving. You know what? He offers up his time, his resources, and stuff like that. He may not have a lot of money, but he will be there. If his commitment to you is to be there, he would be there. If her commitment to you is to be there, she would be there. A lot of people don't want to talk to you. They want to talk about everything else. So for this hour, Life's a Gamble, your host. And I got a couple co-hosts out there, too. When they call in, I'm going to tell you they're co-hosts. We want to talk about you. We want to talk to you. We want you to talk to us. So don't ask me no questions about Israel. Don't ask me no questions about Donald Trump. Don't ask me no questions that does not affect you when you step outside your house in the city of Philadelphia. And don't be, like, prayer wishing for other people. You know, I don't like to send my prayers out. No, If you in a bad situation, the first thing they tell you on an airplane is put the mask over your own face first. So don't come, because I got too many people giving other people accolades and they lazy about their own disposition. They're lazy about their own position, and then they're in a disposition with themselves. I don't want that. I only want truth on this radio station. And so we're 7 minutes after right now, and we got our first caller, our co-host, George. The Mighty George.
Good afternoon, man. How you doing there, Brother Prince?
Man, you the Mighty George. Let me first give you credit, because I tell you what, a lot of people don't make the stand you make, and a lot of people don't have the courage. And I got one question to ask you, George.
What's that?
Philadelphia is riddled with boxers. We have a lot of boxers that have come out of Philadelphia. Am I correct on that?
Pretty much. At one time, we was the number one amateurs in the world.
Right.
Went all over the world. We had amateurs fight all over the world. And the first thing it wasn't New York, Chicago, Detroit. It always was, man, let's hope Philly in the first round and try to get them out or the last round. You know, maybe by then you could be and learn something, you know, but
you had to come through Philly. You had to come through Philly. I remember guys who used to work in sanitation, like used to work all day and get a phone call around lunchtime that they would have a fight at the Blue Horizon. And I don't even know if they went home and took a shower or anything. They just had their bag in their car, and they left from work, got out the overalls, put their gym stuff on, went to the bathroom in the gym, the little small bathroom with the lockers, and got cleaned up and went right to fight. And the most dangerous fighter you can fight is a Philadelphia fighter.
I would give you a prime example of one who, and everybody know him, was Benny Briscoe. Benny Briscoe will work 8 hours a day behind a trash truck, go back to the yard, take a shower, get on the subway, and go to the Spectrum or catch the L, or somebody would drive him to the arena. He'd take a shower. His everything is there already. His robe is, and you know, they give you your gloves there.
Right, right.
And a prime example, he beat Billy Dynamite Douglas he wanted to quit. Mm. He wouldn't knock him out, he would make him quit. All those guys that he fought went up into the next division, was the light heavyweight division. But that's, you know, that's understandable, you know, but if Sherelle Parker was really sharp on it to stop a lot of violence,
right,
you put the pals back up, or you would just, put them in recreation center. But you know, I wanted to hear that from you.
I wanted to hear that from you because a lot of folks think that when we call them and they make themselves important, they don't know that the foundation in the city has already been established. That's why certain people could walk in certain places. I think that if she wants to stop the motorcycle people from driving the bikes, you have all these motorcycle clubs here, motorcycle houses that's been here for years. Find a way to fund them and then have them ride bikes and interact. Because what's going to happen is that you are going to incur such a liability when these cops on bikes chase down these riders on bikes. We just had a...
But that's why they made a law that you're not allowed to chase them on anything. You're not allowed to chase them. The helicopter can chase them, but they're not. But to make a long story short on that, dear Prince, is that it's not so much of that. It's that Michael Nutter, when the city had a chance to do away with all that, dear, that lousy Michael Nutter, that creep that he was and is.
Wait, you talking about the DJ?
You talking about the guy
talking about the DJ? Talking about the DJ?
Talking about the guy that used to play at the Impulse, you
the
know?
DJ, right. Y'all made him mayor. Y'all made the DJ mayor.
They made him the mayor. But the sad part was is that Pico guy had a chance. They was going to take that Raggedy Boulevard, all that swamp land, and they was going to take their own money and invest it and then make it a trail, you know? And they say all the shows that they would do would be broadcast, and they wanted the rights to that. In other words, they were willing to buy the land. Michael Nutter say, no, I don't want anything like, because he didn't ride a bike. He didn't understand a bike. He didn't, and now you have the problem of what he left there. Now, remind you, the bikers, not the bikers, like Suzuki, Honda, all those people.
Kawasaki.
They was willing to foot the bill for something like that. No other city would have had it because they say it's better to have it there than to go to every city and have to, you know, tongue in dirt and do this.
So let me just say this.
A mega for it.
I wrote a 25-page report in reference to the location, what they call swampland out there near the airport.
Absolutely.
With Red Bull,
now Amazon
Kawasaki. Before Amazon was on it, I had Red Bull, I had Kawasaki, I had Suzuki, I had about four Honda, about four of those motorcycle places. And I said from 4 o'clock in the morning, from age 7 to 13, they would enter into a bike repair kind of training there. So you'll know how to take the wheels off. You'll know how to put sprockets in, what tools to use. So you'll have repairs.
The sad part is, not to cut you off, but the sad part is that you have companies, which Kenny wouldn't do it and Nutter wouldn't do it. Companies beg to come here. Listen, can we open up a training facility here for, and I've been in the room on both occasions that they say, listen, we're not asking for anything. Just give us a facility and we'll foot the bill. We need to train people how to work on these new cycles. We also said that we need people to learn how to work on these electric cars before they even became almost like 8-10 years ago when Kenny first went into office. They were talking about on the end of the Nutter's administration. Then they got on into the Kenny's administration, but both turned it down because they say it wasn't feasible for unions, which was stupid.
Well, here's the thing. If it gets big enough dollar-wise, because the union's not as petty as people think they are. Union function based on a certain dollar amount. So sometimes if it's over $5 million, then they want to be engaged in that because they figure that's enough money to support and take care of a whole system. So under $5 million, you usually get away with the $1 million, $3 million places and stuff like that. But so to your point, how come they've gambled on this foolishness which have left people in poverty, George?
Well, it's like if you have poverty pimps in the room, right, which by the rule says you have to have, you got to let some of them in the room. But always remember, it's two rooms. It's the rooms that they get these poverty pimps and these people want to make noise. They let them in the room with the officials. And Sherelle does it better than anybody. She come right to you. You know, that's why I like and respect her so much. You ain't going to bully her. She the gangster. I admire everything she do. She put these punks in their place.
So let me ask you a question.
Talk to any kind of way.
Let me ask you a question. So give me two, because I don't know what the poverty pimps look like. I got an understanding of what they do. But so what do they look like? Are they, you know, do they have storefronts? Do they got buildings in the neighborhood?
They don't have nothing. They don't have nothing. They don't even know how to do paperwork. They just, you know a friend and know somebody completely. Other word, it's called a hookup. You know, they come up with an LLC, you know, and they say, man, we need a grant. But the point is, let me give you a prime example. And an old man was telling me this here a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. He said, George, let me ask you a question. He say, I see that y'all put a lot of money in Stop the Violence, guns, this and that. And I say, yeah, Pop, I understand. And they do. He's, and he broke it down to me. He say, you know, that he say, all these here poverty pimps about, you know, violence. He say, they're the biggest fences. He say, you don't hear nothing about the death hustlers no more. He say, they just shut them poor death hustlers down, except the ones who got a little paperwork. They give them a little something, something, you know.
George,
but the whole thing was, friends.
George, hold on. It's 15 minutes after. Let me take a quick break. And I'll come back. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. This is WWDB, 860 AM. Calling number is 888-329-3306. We're going to take a break and come right back with Life's a Gamble.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. We leave no warrior behind. Wounded Warrior Project is a nonprofit organization created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war. Whether those scars are physical or mental, we're here to make sure that they heal. And whether it's helping those with post-traumatic stress disorder live a normal life again, or giving much-needed support to injured warriors and veterans hospitals, because no one deserves our help more than the men and women who risk their lives to keep us safe. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind. Ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away.
Know when to run. You know that's my favorite song, George. So look, George, thank you for holding. I'm glad to have you back. I'm going to let you finish your statement, but there at the beginning of the show, I asked if folks knew a few folks. So when you are done your comment, I want you to answer this question, and I want you to tell me how well you know this person. Number one, his name is Chris Woods from 1199C. And I want you to tell me how well you know him. And I want you to tell me if you know Isaiah Thomas and Cindy Bass. Now, I know Cindy Bass used to work for Shaka Fatai before she became a councilwoman. So I knew her through Shaka Fatai. And I respect everybody, so I speak when I see her, but I need somebody who knows her to tell me. Now, I was with you when we were down the Electrical Union when they had some kind of holiday event, and Isaiah Thomas was down there because I think he was running again for city council. I think the first time he ran, the signatures wasn't good. Second time he ran, he didn't have a degree, so I think he went to Lincoln or something like that. Something happened where I think the third time was a charm. But I need, you know, you to tell me, and I need you to tell the listening audience, how well you know those three people, Chris Woods, Isaiah Thomas, and Cindy Bass.
Okay, let me finish what I was saying about how the poverty pimp game works.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody have a clear understanding about who gets and who doesn't get. If you want to stop the violence, you say you got these people, they get millions of dollars to stop the violence, stop guns, stop all this foolishness, everything that you can think of to stop. Ask yourself a question. If they was to stop it, would they keep getting the check? Answer is no. So what's the incentive for them to stop anything?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you see elected officials howling and screaming that foolishness, that means they want to take care of a couple of friends, or they got some extra money they just want to give somebody that, you know, might return the favor when they get ready to run.
You know what? And this is hard.
It's a big hustle.
Hold up. This is hard. This is hard when we talk to people, because the average citizen think that what they know is what they know. You know, they do. They do. They think what they know is what they know, because the average politician know what they're going to do because they're already dictated to on what they need to do. So when I asked a question last week, how you leave a position as president of city council, which is the highest position other than the mayor, and you didn't run for mayor, and then you take a position to sit on the Philadelphia Housing Authority board. Well, it's not just him. It's Daryl Clark. It's Sandra Dungey Glenn. It's another guy that was in building or in the trades. And so,
okay, you ain't got to go that far, Prince. Let me clear this up for you because I know you're going to run out of time and you got callers waiting. Mm-hmm. They went to either one or two places. They went to the hospice or they went to the geriatric center, right, to get them. Okay, all those people are like washed up, finished, done. You know, it's like it's like you're at the end of your game.
They're a phone call away from success, though. If they got people.
No, they ain't a phone call from anywhere because their job is to make sure black people in this city gets nothing.
Wow.
And to prove it, look at their record of saying what did they do when they were there.
Wow.
Good. I can name one. Look at Daryl Clark. Daryl Clark begged for public housing to come into his area, yeah. Right? So therefore, he knew his friend, which I don't have to name because that's not right.
Right.
His friend will name. He'll end up getting all these PHA contracts. And then they talk about, oh, we're going to do this for black. You're not going to do nothing for black people. Stop it. You know, everybody that they, all of them they put on that board, right, is these this last group of a geriatric or the hospice people they put on there. You know, it's funny in Philadelphia. They always go to a somebody on their way, minding their business, going to the hospice or going to the geriatric center, right? They just grab them out. Yo, we need you. We need you a couple more years. We got to finish this shit, but I'm going to the hospice. I know, put it off. Don't worry about it. They act like they, you know, they say all do all. But
no, they did that. Let me tell you when they did that. They did that when they went and got this guy from Register of Wills, 80-year-old man that was in his recliner, didn't care about anything dealing with Register of Wills.
He was at a geriatric center.
Right.
No, he was at a hospice.
But he didn't care anything about Register of Wills. And this young lady messed up so bad by... She messed up so bad. We're not going to say how she messed up. She messed up so bad that they went, and this, I don't know if it shows the lack of understanding or if it shows how gangster this city
lack
is.
Lack of anger.
Because the war leaders are a force to be reckoned with, and they used to be that for like 40 years, 50 years. The war leaders and the committee people would make you or break you. You know, I didn't think Rizzo Jr. was going to leave out of office. And yet he's not there no more. I didn't think, what's the guy that just left? David O. was going to leave out of office. And yet he's not there anymore. They may use other alternative situations, like I'm going to run for another office that you know you're not going to win. But the fact that you leave a comfortable job shows that how folks should make that job uncomfortable. All right, George, give me your response about the three people I talked about. Chris Wood, 1199.
Chris Woods was a protege of the great Henry Nicholas, right? I knew Chris Woods when he came through the ranks and everything.
Right.
He was mentoring and he was helping Isaiah. Isaiah learned a lot about, I wouldn't say he learned from Chris Woods. Chris Woods was more like a guy that financed him, you know, took him to the right money people and all,
right.
You know. Isaiah's not what I expect him to be. You know, he hasn't reached that level of the respectability because of, if you look at Henry Nicholas and then you look at Chris Woods, he's nothing like him, the mindset of what they did and thought about the Lord, you know, poor people, you know.
Are you rolling the dice with Chris?
I'll be with Pass Chris them? Because
okay,
what
so
I,
you're rolling with Chris. Are you rolling the dice for Isaiah?
That's not for me to say. That's the house call.
Are you passing the dice then? If you get into the house, you're passing it then. All right. So, okay. Yeah. So you're rolling in with Chris and you're passing it with Isaiah. How about Cindy Bass? Are you keeping the dice
Cindy
with her?
Cindy Bass is about the best of the best. She's the closest thing to Councilwoman Blackwell you can find.
Mm.
Her word is good.
Mm.
If you don't cross, everybody know you don't cross her.
Mm.
You know, she'll take it to her grave. And she could have been president of council. She gave that up to get even with the people that was trying to dog her out. And everybody that dogged her out is out of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Period. She did whatever she had to do to go after them. anytime you in your late 40s or early 50s and somebody in the third grade did something detrimental to you, like taking your milk, you know, that milk meant a lot to her. To this day here, she still is, you know, kind of like hot about that. But I like and respect her because whatever she says she's going to do, if she can't do it, you know, you're not going to come in her district doing. She only wanted to don't have any kind of recovery centers or rehab, any none of that foolishness in her district. None of it. Nowhere. You can't find one.
Okay, now I know I was going to let you go, but you know what? It's more a pleasure in me talking to you than you might get from talking to me. So I got another question to ask you. So now we talked about the Democratic Party in a way where I know four. If there's any other ones, then you help me out. If not, then tell me why these people think that they can, you know, take down the legend. So for the congressional seat that the White Evan holds, I'm hearing rumors of Helen Gim, Chris Rabb, Sharif Streets, and Morgan Cephas.
And there's four of them. There's four of them, right?
I know four. You know, I know four. But here's the thing. You know, if we deal with Chris Rabb and Sharif Streets, do they have any connections in Southwest and West?
No.
Right. And so we deal with Helen Gim. Does she have any connections with Mount Airy, Southwest, and West?
Well, let's run through it real quick. First of all, I'm sick of these professional obituary writers. You know, everybody you name is a professional obituary writer. That's all they do, go around writing somebody's obituary. They are writing Dwight's obituary like, you know, they already know what, they already in plan what church he's going to be at, who's going to preach his funeral, who's on the guest list. You know, I mean, it's a shame. How are you going to plan somebody's funeral and the person's still going around? I'm with Dwight on this here, mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. And those who go after White, trust me, I'm going to come after you. I mean, I don't always agree with Dwight. But I don't believe that you put somebody in the grave because you want their job. You know, you want their job, run for their job while they're there. You know, you're gonna put them in the ground. I don't even know why they're even trying to plan his funeral. They already wrote his obituary. You know, they just say, we ain't gonna put no date in here, but you know, it's coming up. I mean, that's the way elected officials talk. That's how dirty and low life that they are.
Hold on. Now, Morgan Cephas, that was the fourth name. I don't know if she knows folks beyond West Philly. You know, so out of all these candidates, doesn't it leave room for a sleeper?
No.
Okay.
No such thing as that because it's too much control and too much there. Helen Gim will never get nothing. I mean, nothing. She couldn't even get a job picking up trash. Listen, the object was if she wasn't married to make her walk around and pick up cans. That's how
She married. She married to a guy.
That's what I'm saying. She married in the money. That's what I just said.
Yeah, she got a bunch of money.
That's what I just said. But the whole object, the party hated her so much that they was gonna make her go around picking up cans. That could have happened. She'll never hold seats again. And people who sit there and deal with the working families and all these progressives, trust me, it's just a matter of time. Like they say, we don't know how it's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
Now, see, and this is why I appreciate you calling, and this is why I say they got some people here that are co-hosts. I thank you so much for calling. Look, I'm going to go to the next phone call, and next Monday you have a home here from 2 to 3. Life's a gamble. All right?
I hear you, Prince, and have a good one, my good brother.
Thank you, man.
And, you know, and let me say one other thing.
Uh-huh.
All those people who disrespect old people, you know, like, you know, thinking about, I'll take a prime example. All these idiots and low-life stinking people who never go call their mother, don't go see their mother. The only time they go see their parents is when they want something. Mm-hmm. And as soon as their parents get old, they want to put them in a nursing home, sell their house, raid their bank account. But those low-life stinking, rotten, no good.
We get the point.
But the point is, Prince, they forget that they're going to get old.
One
you know
day.
What I hope?
One
that
day.
The orderly never change their pants.
Wait. I got you. Let me take Clyde. I got you. We good.
Have a good one.
All right, later. Clyde.
Good afternoon, Prince. Boy, you got to give it to George, boy. He's no holes barred, man.
Hey, check this out. So I'm glad I have you here. So
yes, sir.
I just seen a commercial by your president that said, "This America does not need a degree, does not need a college degree for all the new jobs that are out there. And I want to pose this to an educator like yourself. So people who look like you and people before you who spent all that money to go to college, who has looked towards this president to give them some relief, see a commercial like this, that there's plenty of jobs out there. You didn't even need to go to college. Matter of fact, during the pandemic, when you was fired from your job because it shut down because it was a pandemic, you know, then how are you going to pay back that degree if you don't have a job? And if this president is showing commercials that says you don't need a degree to get the jobs that he got for you, doesn't it almost feel like locking a person up for marijuana and then making it legal? I mean, don't it feel nasty like that? Because why would you even do a commercial that says you don't need a college degree? You know, I got opportunities for you. Who are you marketing that to? Can't be marketing to the HBCUs because without people, they'll shut down.
Pretty much. Well, I got to correct you on a couple things, man.
I'm here for correction. Correct me, man.
You said my president, and we're not gonna get into that. We're gonna have discussions off the air about that.
We're gonna talk about that off air. All right, he's not your president. All right.
And,
I got you.
And
what else?
Another thing, and I mean, you privy to this. Is I never understood this part of it. So I go to school for 4 years. I get out.
Yeah.
I go to get a job.
Right.
They look at my credentials. Everything is good.
Right.
Well, we can't hire you because you got bad credit. Well, I need a job to pay back that money.
I didn't even know they did credit checks on jobs.
Yes, sir.
I thought they only did background checks.
Bro, they've been doing that for the last 15, 20 years.
And nobody in Congress stopped them from doing that? What's your credit got to do with the job? Unless you're working at the bank.
Bro, I'm telling you, that's what's happening now. They coming at all angles. And when I first heard about it years ago, I'm like, yo, that's straight up discrimination.
So where your NAACPs? Where your civil rights people at? Where they at? Isn't that violation of your information? Isn't that violation of your information?
Hey man, they collecting money, man. People, we in the age of it's about me, and you better get on the train or find some way to get through life. And it's me against the world.
Wait. So you saying we had a get down or lay down kind of situation now?
It's almost like that, you know, from their appearances. And you know, you said something earlier, and
are we rolling them today or are we passing them?
Are we rolling?
You said something
that got me, and you was like, you know, we got to be careful about what think people say and what they know and all like that there. And my dear professor, man, and my mentor from years ago used to say this at the end of his show. It's not the things that you know that get you in trouble. It's the things that you know.
Think you know that ain't so.
That just don't happen to be so.
Right. It's the things you think you know. Right. You know. And my thing is that, okay, so if I'm fed up because I'm in the same circuit that you're in and I'm making the same phone call to a place that you're making a phone call to and I'm not getting the results I'm looking for and yet they're wearing the African-American or black or whatever title that they're wearing, and then I work out the magic to create an environment where you can express your feelings and live the life, live the dream. And then now you want to come and you want to be, so you don't see if my dad gave me the money, you don't see if I borrowed the money, you don't see the resources that I use to make it happen. You just want to condemn the place I'm at, working on making it happen. And I can't allow you to do that. I can't allow you to do that because what may not be good for you may be food for somebody else. And it may fill them up, you know. I'll make sure that it's clean. I'll make sure that it's not disrespectful. I'll make sure that no one hurts anyone. But I need you to be challenged. I need you to not to whimper away. I need strength. And I don't need you to be a coward when it comes to times that you need to be strong. And so I think you hide from other places when you call them because they say, well, They say, look at the statistics, or they say, look at the numbers, or they say, and I'm like, wait a minute. You don't get a tourist town like this. This town is not nice. This town is not deserving of a title that says that it is number one in these areas, while you still have such a huge level of poverty. And I'm not talking about taking care of poor people. I'm talking about the kind of poverty that spends $80 million in a neighborhood, and none of that have included the neighborhood people. That's the kind of poverty. And for the poverty to exist where the neighborhood people can enjoy having fun and spending the subsidized dollars that they got, or the limited resources that they got, or the resources that was illegally gained that they spend at corner bars and sneaker places and shoe places and outfits and stuff. And yet still, you would think that they are a participant in that $80 million that's in their neighborhood, rather it's $100 million at Temple, $80 million in Nicetown, another $100 million up there where LaSalle is. You would think that they are going to work getting a check every day like people used to when the Bud Factory was on Huntington Park.
Mm-hmm.
When the Wonder Bread was in the Northeast on the Boulevard, when you can actually get on the bus and go to work at the Tasty Cake, you can walk to the Tasty Cake Factory. So they're spending money like they're walking to these jobs and getting that money every week. And yet you got $80 million in your neighborhood, and the politicians who got corners all over the neighborhood haven't found a way to have a big enough work job ready fare so they can say, my cousin works on the bridge. He makes $33 an hour. He's at the gate, or he's in that job some kind of way. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back, and then I'm going to open the line back to you.
All right.
Between business life, social life, and her best bud, Loki, Beverly has a lot to focus on. Especially while fighting Stargardt, a blinding retinal disease that starts during childhood and gets worse over time. But despite her vision loss, she's hopeful because she knows she's not fighting alone. For 50 years, the Foundation Fighting Blindness has funded research into treatments and cures for blinding diseases, providing real hope to those fighting vision loss. And our nationwide community of local chapters provides networking and support for people with vision loss, as well as their loved ones. Because the best way to fight against blinding diseases is to fight together. And for Beverly, winning the fight means focusing on what's closest to her. The Foundation Fighting Blindness. Together, we're winning. Learn more about how you can help us end blinding diseases at fightingblindness.org.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America.
I joined the Navy to serve my country as a Navy SEAL. While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. And I broke my neck. It left me paralyzed. Paralyzed Veterans of America was by my side from that moment on.
Since 1946, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to our wounded veterans. We will never leave a fallen comrade behind.
Thanks to PVA, paralyzed veterans are getting specialized medical care and treatments. The benefits they've earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need.
I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
To learn more, go to PVA.org today.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away.
Know when to run. Fly, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, you just got me spoiled, man. I'm here talking all the way into the commercial break. So go ahead. Let me be quiet for a minute. I need to throw a couple things out there to you. I think I've already have. But if the kids are being sent home from school because of the hairstyle, why are you sending them to school? Number one, the public schools and the poor schools need your kids in order for them to operate. And if you need your kid to go to school, then you need to get together as a family and find a way to make the school just suffer, because your kid shouldn't have to change his hairstyle in order to go to school. if he's a good kid, if he's a smart kid, if he's participating in the process, it irritates me that you will find you got this Crown Act based on you being somewhere where don't nobody want you. Stupid as that. The Crown Act ain't in Africa. It ain't in Ghana. It is not in where did I go? Lagos. You don't have a Crown Act nowhere. Only way you got a Crown Act is in places that have situations where single women in politics won't give a job, won't find a way to have a job situation for a guy so he can reclaim his family. But you'll worry about the Crown Act. You know, you got to do, this is foolish right here, man. This is so, he's the smartest guy. Most of your smart kids are homeschooled anyway. You understand what I'm saying? And you're part of a system, you know, a systemic system that gives you not the best. Don't produce the best. Only if they an athlete. I mean, then they looked upon at age 10 and then 12 and we can mold them and make them a LeBron James. But why are you letting other people educate your children anyway? And then you want to get on the news and the cameras want to show up and say, well, you know, you're being discriminated against. No, I don't think you are. I think you're real limited. And that's all we got is the school system. Well, if that's all you got, I'll tell you what, I've seen grandmoms and I've seen parents make more out of having nothing in the refrigerator, turned into a whole meal. You know, some grandmoms, my great-grandma couldn't read. I've seen the man come and she would mark X, you know. But then when he would leave, she would have Bible study. So make it make sense.
It's the climate and the era that we're living in. You know, and you know, we had this discussion many times, and I really don't have the answer for it. You know, to be honest.
But you went there. You see this, like you see this on a regular basis. Yeah. You know, and the problem is that with a guy like you, I know when you go to work and you doing what's right, and you see that they put a less educated person there, or they see they put somebody there that's making all these errors and doing something that. They couldn't have learned that. They couldn't learn that it was so poorly done. They could not have learned that, meaning that no one corrected them because either who they know or who they came through, you know. And I'm telling you, I feel sorry for guys like yourself, man, because every time you try to speak up and they say blow the whistle, there's 9 times out of 10 you're going to be the one fired.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I got to the point where, you know, it is what it is. You know, the one thing is that, you know, when you're in these systems, you know what I mean, and you make too much noise,
yeah,
they definitely going to, you know, find ways, do paper trails and get rid of you. Mm. The other thing is that, you know, I kind of, you know, equate some movies with the times that we're living. And if you remember that scene in Training Day where he told the young man, you know, his partner, he's like, listen, man, you got to have a little dirt on you for anybody to trust you.
I'm glad you brought that up because you know, my very first book, the first book I wrote, The Gamble That Failed, Philly yep. Roulette, The Gamble That Failed, you know, I didn't buy into that because, you know, because even if Philadelphia has certain bad actors that want to be corrupt, you still got certain people who stand on principle and got enough heart to confront them who want to be corrupt. Because I'm telling people in this book, I'm saying, well, these are federal dollars. You know, I was placed there for a reason, you know, and the Philadelphia Housing Authority operates, but the Philadelphia mm-hmm. Housing Authority will not be your friend if you are getting indicted for misappropriating federal dollars. And one of the worst ways you can do that is not to service the very people who are in public housing, who you have a contract to service, you know. Mm-hmm. And so those folks were looking down on these people. And I'm not saying that they were deliberately, more like an overt situation, you know, whenas, you know, there's not enough people in the office to service them, or the resources, they got to come back for resources and stuff like that, or the fact that they all should be relocated back into a development that they were relocated out of. Certain information and documentation needed to be had in order to get them back in that place. And those things were like the 11th hour, last minute information that you would tell the resident to have to bring you when you should have been on that months ago. You know, and in my book, and I think it was thoroughly written, because it laid out every aspect, but it also laid out who let these people at the table. Who let these people? And I mentioned names. Like I am not afraid to mention names, because if it was the other way around, they would have no problem mentioning my name, period.
Right.
You know, and so my thing is, the gamble that felt solely lied on the responsibility of a person like Gamble, who said that they my people, they listen to my songs. They might have children from my songs, so I know what's best for them. And then everybody who could have helped, everybody who would have been a friend, everybody who would have helped us benefit, stepped back. And most people do that. Like LeBron James, when he decided to invest in a school, everybody stepped back. And yet his school is the worst and the lowest performing school that has never passed the accreditation since it's open. You understand what I'm saying? And so, because you got money, does not make you the expert on poverty.
That's correct. You know, there's two things. I know you got another caller, other callers.
Don't worry about that. You know, this is your home right here. When you home, you home. You know what I mean? Don't worry about that. Let's talk.
When you started off with George, you was talking about boxing, and Philly was a haven for boxing back then, and you know, Benny Briscoe and Matthew Saad Muhammad, and I remember my dad used to take me down to Spectrum every Monday, and they had Monday night fights. So you took me back. You took me back with that.
Ken Haywood to train my son. And although Joe Frazier wasn't born here, he was born down south, he came here and made a home here, lived right out to south side of White Marsh. So the reason why I even mentioned boxing, period, was because we had fighters back in the day. We had some real, and so now we stepped, I remember in my household that my mom couldn't answer the door. My dad answered the door. Even if he had to come all the way downstairs from out the bathroom, he answered the door.
Yeah.
My mom never answered the door. My dad never left temptation for the millman, the milkman, or somebody selling the stuff they used to, what's it called? The clothes and stuff like that, Finger Hut. He never left opportunity for anyone to be answering that door and stuff like that. So that's what I seen in a man. You know,
I remember those days, Prince, man. God, them days are almost gone, man. They almost gone. There's one more thing real quick. You know, it's an old saying that numbers don't lie. Well, numbers don't lie, but the people that write them do.
Exactly. Except for if they're in a number house.
Yeah, how about that?
They got to be right number, because if it come out, somebody got to get
paid. Sir.
So no, don't rush too fast. We got some time here, you know.
Okay.
So when I look at this city right here, you know, and if you don't hold your own people accountable, I'm so tired of this. You make this black and white because it's easy for you to disguise as you're not doing nothing for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, white people, if you say white people, and I use it as descriptive, I don't use it as to talk about them, but the hate and anger. So white people want job placement. They want job placement. They don't necessarily want to go to work. They want job placement. That's like how most of them are your boss or in a supervisor position or a position of authority. They want job placement, but the African-American person want job recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm the first supervisor out of the last 40 years that's ever been selected for this position. And so how you think things going to change? You the first one. 40 years they've been running a system here. Only thing changed is that they put you there. But you know their system real well, so that's why they put you there. You still got Tylenols and Advils and all those pain relief things in your drawer, because when the stuff hit the fan, you're responsible for that. It's going to fall on your head. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And another thing, you know, when they talk about white and black, white people want generational wealth. They want to make sure that that is secure. They have the confidence in their kids to make sure their kids run around freely and stuff like that. We got generational politicians. Which means that they still going to give out the crumbs. You still only going to get the crumbs, and they're going to sit in a room. And this is what I like. So you talk about some of the places that's supposed to be servicing the poor, But every event they get, the venues cost more than, the venue is very expensive. The venue's either in Center City or one of those.
You're stepping on toes. Now.
On one of those union leagues or one of those country clubs or, and so the stupidity goes from that to a single mom who working two jobs, spending $20,000 on a prom for a six. She ain't a 10. She ain't going to be no 10. She a six. In your mind, she your baby girl. But in her mind, guys don't care how you dress up. She a six. It don't even really matter. You just spent $20,000 working two jobs for a six to go where? To do what? Then she got a nervous breakdown because people on Facebook talking about, that's a lot of money, but you stupid. That's a lot of money for what? What you doing with it? You know, you still don't got no boyfriend. You know, so social media is dangerous.
And yet
we function as if we can't function without it.
And hey, so, you know what, Prince, man? I got off of that thing. It's been almost like 9 months now. And I don't miss it because it's, you know, a lot of people pontificating to be stuff that they ain't. They claim things that they don't. They can't claim to have things that they don't have.
Right.
And it's the biggest drug in America right now is attention.
How about
it's
that?
The biggest drug in America right now is attention. I mean, from people that's 70 or 80 years old down to these little children that's almost 2 and 3 now. That's how they're teaching their children right now. It's like I said, the safest place in America is the library because most of us don't read anymore.
You know, now, as the technology has changed and as the availability of it has changed, I think that the opportunity for us to separate and be more progressive is there now. Because people respect you more based on you competing than for you just to be in the room right now. And it seems that there's a lot of us, a lot of folks who are of African American persuasion, keep talking about systems that only revert back to you getting the least of the opportunities. It revert back to you having clearly to none opportunities. And so I don't understand if you work 60 hours and you get time and a half in overtime and you like what you do, I'm all in for it. But when you work 60 hours and that university wants you to come in because they having a special event and yet your paycheck is still small after working all those hours, then you need an advocate. You need to come where somebody could support and help you get more money. This is ridiculous. Right. You know, you need to come and have an advocate that says, hey, this. I'm not talking about a union advocate because, you know, I don't know one union that is operated and ran by African-Americans. I know one that support it, but then when I look at the pictures on the wall, they don't run it. They don't run it. I'm going to give you the last minute, man. Go ahead, man. I know I didn't spoke a lot.
You sound like bugging out on do the right thing. Sal, we ain't got no black people on the wall, man. and you know, I'm saying that in jest, but you're absolutely correct. And this the one thing that me and you talked about earlier, man, that I had to get in. And it's like, you know, my opinion, it's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, we squandered the biggest opportunity we ever had on the planet is when, you know, unfortunately, George Floyd passed, you know, was murdered. And we had a groundswell of world attention. A groundswell of world attention.
And
the thing about it, we didn't put our foot on the gas with that. And they started settling cases and stuff like that there. And now look at what was going on now. Again, young African Americans is being killed.
But I think you had the chance to get rid of that qualified immunity at that time.
So, and that's what I'm saying.
If you don't know what to ask for, in the negotiations.
Exactly.
Number one, I'm not going to help you. And number two, I'm not going to give you what you don't know what to ask for.
I hear Reverend Al asking for the George Floyd bill, that has some aspects of qualified immunity. No, go after qualified immunity, period. Just like the Colorado has done. And it's another state that has done the same thing.
Well, look, you know what? You're going to co-host with me next week. I'm going to wrap up. You see, it's 5 minutes. See, this hour goes so fast, man. So we're going to advocate for some more time. But next Monday, we're going to talk about qualified immunity. Is that good?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Thank you, man. Have a tremendous day today, man. Thank everyone for calling in, my two co-hosts. Sorry I couldn't get to the rest of the people online. I apologize. This is Prince, and I'm out.